Hi, family. My name is Pedro, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. I was recruited to do this, a little while ago because I guess they needed somebody to speak, and Michael volunteered me. I was resentful, I was angry. And the reason for that is, when you go away for a couple of days, you want to relax. When you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning every day to go to work, you figure you want to sleep in. So, I was really resentful at first. But I said, it's not my doing, it's God's doing. And so you can understand a little bit about me. I was a child of 7. And my mother and father, they're very dysfunctional. He was an alcoholic drug addict. He was a merchant seaman who landed in New York, met my mother, got married, and didn't get married right away. He was threatened to be deported because he wasn't a resident of the United States. So, growing up, we had a little joke that I was illegitimate, me and my sister, before he recognized us. But anyway, early on in life, I was twirled into this tunnel of darkness. I was raped at the age of 6, and very early I learned how to, internalize secrets and not speak to anybody. Because when I went to my mother and told her, she had been looking for me all morning, because once this had happened, I went and hid under the bed because I was in really great pain. And 6 years old, I just didn't know what to do. And all I know, I was woken up by the sound of her voice calling me, hysterically crying, and I crawled from underneath the bed, and I guess in her gladness and whatever, she was like so nervous she hit me, so immediately I thought I had done something really, really wrong, and so I couldn't speak about what had just transpired, and I learned to internalize those kind of things all of my life, and so I came to recovery. When I got here, I met a woman who had been, I had been on the verge of suicide, and, I couldn't stop using. I was 43 years old, and I knew I needed help, and so I went to a place to see if I can get enrolled in an outpatient, but they wouldn't take my insurance, and they suggested a 10-day outpatient. And I went to this outpatient, and there I met this woman who, she was recovering from Demerol. And, she was filthy rich. She used to fly to Switzerland to get Demerol and come back. And so they put us in these therapy sessions, and she came over, and we kind of made friends, and she suggested that I go to an NA meeting. I said, oh, an NA meeting, what's that? She said, oh, it's a place where people like you, go, people with purple hair and weird people like you. I said, oh, wow. So I decided to go to my first NA meeting, and I walked in, of course, not following suggestions, 20 minutes late, and I stood, not for the whole meeting, but during that meeting, the guy that was sharing, he had been a bum on the number 2 train in New York, begging, he smelled like shit, And there he was in a shark skin suit, sharing that he was a civil engineer. And I said, oh my God, if that guy can do this, so can I. My friend, I guess because I was late, maybe she showed up and left, I don't know. I went home. And a week before that, I had been sitting in my living room with a razor blade, wanting to slit my wrist because I couldn't stop using. And my neighbor upstairs knocked on the door, and I was crying incessantly. And she said, "Well, what's the matter?" And us addicts, we're great at manipulating, lying, and cheating. So I manipulated her and talked her into buying me the next 8-ball, bottle of vodka and some beer and cigarettes. And there I was off to the races. But once I went to treatment and they referred me to that outpatient and I met this woman, you know, I went to my, from there, I went home and I started crying again, saying, oh my God, what am I going to do? And my same neighbor comes downstairs and knocks on the door and she saw me crying. And she says, what is it now? And I told her, she said, you ain't getting me for another eight ball, sucker. You know, and I said, no. You know, I went to this meeting and, you know, I heard some really good things, but I'm really afraid of going to these meetings. So she said, well, you know, my husband Vinny has a drug problem. Maybe we can go to a meeting together and I could hear some information that might be useful. So right around the corner, there was a meeting and we went to that meeting. And I walked into that meeting and I sat down. And she sat down next to me. At that time, they had beepers. No one had cell phones. And her beeper went off and she says, oh, I gotta go. And she left and she left me there alone. So I had heard a few things at that first meeting about getting a sponsor, about making meetings and stuff like that. So the guy that had been, that was sharing that at that particular meeting, they used to call him Serenity Joe. And I remembered him from being kicked off the cop line because me and him had gotten into a fight for jumping the line and they closed down the cop line. So, you know, I saw him and he was sharing. He was so serene and so calm. I said, oh my God, you know, let me approach this guy. During the secretary's break, I approached him and, you know, he tells me, I tell him, how'd you do this? He tells me, one day at a time. I didn't understand, so I thought he was getting smart. I said, fucking smart Alec. You know? So I went and I sat down and they said, listen for a sponsor. And this woman was sharing something really profound that I had identified with. And when the meeting broke, I asked her, would you be my sponsor? And she said, men with the men, women with the women, for obvious reasons. I said, oh shit, I'm batting zero here. I don't know, this shit is not for me. So when they formed the circle and said the serenity prayer, as soon as the serenity prayer was over, I dashed for the door. And the guy came behind me, grabbed me on the shoulder, and I said, get away from me, you're a smart aleck. And he said, no, give me a minute to explain to you what I meant by that. I said, no. He said, come on, come out for coffee with me. I said, I don't drink coffee. So he said, a soda. So I went. We sat down at this diner and we started talking and then he started explaining to me, you know, what he meant by one day at a time. So he says, you know, you need to give yourself a chance. You know, and I had used for 32 years of my life, you know, and it was total darkness and, you know, I was miserable. You know, I had lost jobs for embezzling. You know, I lived to use and used to live. You know, what else did I know how to do? And all I knew was that I had to change my life somewhat and I had to try something new. So I said, well, let me give this a chance. The next day he picked me up and took me to my next NA meeting. You know, and lo and behold, you know. And things started happening automatically that kept confirming for me that I was doing the right thing. I'd gone to a convention 5 months clean. And at this convention, we were staying in this little motel and across from that motel, there was a church and they were having a rummage sale. And I said, oh, sweat. You know, and I went in there, you know, looking through the stuff and I found etched in gold on a mirror, the serenity prayer. You know, and I said, oh my God, this is telling me that I am doing something right in my life. You understand? And I took that home and I was so happy. You know, Michael happens to be a friend of mine from D.C. He came and he sort of reinforced that frame just the other day. I've had that frame now for about 22 years. You know, and you know, then right down the block from that same hotel, it was a prison, a men's prison. And they were yelling at us, hey, you, give a cigarette, sell me some money, you know. And I said, oh, shit. And I said, by the grace of God, that could be me up there. Begging for cigarettes and money in jail, you know, and that also affirmed to me that I was doing the right thing, you know. And, you know, my life had been so miserable. There was no real joy in my life, You know, I used to get up, go to work to make money just to use. You know, what was the happiness in that? You know, I could never acquire any of the nice things that people had. Everything had to go. It was either in the pipe, snorting coke, you know, or heroin. Even spit back methadone was part of my life. And I just didn't want to live like that. You know, and so I said, well, let me give NA a full chance, because I wasn't sure I was going to stay. When I got there, I used to sit in my hands, trembling. I couldn't utter a full sentence. That's how much drugs I had done in my lifetime. And I thought my life was ruined, you know. So immediately, you know, somebody suggests, hey, maybe you should do a little bit of service, you know. And I said, well, what's the fun in that, you know? And he said, well, you know, you're going to learn that going on that you can't keep this unless you give it away. So I said, all right, let me try. And I started doing a secretary's break at one of the meetings. I went and memorized the whole script because I, you know, being the addict and the perfectionist I am, you know, I memorized the whole thing. And when I got up there, I forgot everything, just like today. You know, you sit here, you rehearse everything that you're going to say, and nothing comes out of what you thought about. You know, and that's the way it is, you know. And this morning I got up, and it was 5 to 6, and there was this mist, all this fog, you know. And, you know, I sat in that balcony for a minute, and I said, oh, my God, you know, where's the sun? You know, why is it so misty? I wanted to see the sunrise, you know. But I said, you know, let me look for the beauty in this. You know, and I sat there, and then this woman comes out. She was locked out of her car. She left all her baggage, you know. And she looked up, and she saw me. She says, would you please watch this for me? And I said, sure. You know, and then the sun started peeping through a little bit, you know, and then the birds start flying, you know. And I remember at one time, all I could hear was birds chirping at my window and me being so goddamn annoyed that they woke me up from last night using, you know. And, you know, and I just sat there in awe, admiring how wonderful it is to live today, you know. I mean, in many situations, I was so close to death when I used. I remember being in the Dominican Republic and getting into a car and driving to the edge of it, stone out of my mind, with this girl who had worked for American Airlines, driving to the edge of a cliff, and I was this close to, you know, falling from that cliff with that car. And, you know, and I said, oh, my God, why is God giving me a reprieve here? Yeah, I got to stop drinking. Yeah, I got to stop getting high, you know. But lo and behold, that wasn't good enough. I remember having a really bad reaction to heroin. You know, I had a really bad asthma attack. I managed to call 911. They said, crack the window, leave the door open, sit by the open window. And I did. By the time I reached the hospital, I had passed out and they had intubated me. And I spent 8 days, and I call that, you know, like 8 days of massive overhaul. Because before you know it, you know, the 8 days were up and I was going home. I lived 8 blocks from the hospital. Instead of going home, I got directly on the subway and went and copped some more dope. And, you know, having allergic reactions like that, you'd think, you know, you'd get some kind of sense. But not me. You know, I guess I was on a suicide mission. And I remember making a pact with a high school friend. He said, if ever, you know, I get sick with the virus, you know, I'm going to die with a mountain of cocaine, some vodka, some rum, Bacardi rum. And I said, oh, my God. You know, and that's the way I was thinking. And that's the way I was living. And, you know, it was no fun. Unfortunately, he died and never saw the rooms of recovery, but I was able to get here in time. You know, this is a family disease. I have members who use all the time. And, you know, it's hard for me to go around them. But, you know, when I do go, you know, I'm there shortly and then I'm off. I can't stay there too long. You know, I'm rambling. And the reason, you know, I truly live, you know, a really happy life. This past year was one of the worst years of my life. I had a tenant from hell. And they were up there getting high. He moved out, left squatters. I had to go through. And it's not hard if you're a landlord and you lived away from, but I was living right in the same house with them. And, oh my God, what I went through, I called people. I was so miserable. But in all that misery, I was able to, you know, overcome and put some principles into practice. You know, I was homicidal, I was suicidal, you know, but, you know, God guided me in that one. I called people and people, you know, were trying to be understanding, and it's hard to apply principles when you're going through something so horrible. And people would tell me, oh, you know, turn it over. And I said, yeah, you go through the shit and you see how when you turn it over. You know, it is not easy. People will tell you what to do and apply principles and meditation and prayer, not knowing that you've exhausted those things, you know, and you're at the brink of, you know, really wanting to hurt yourself or hurt somebody, you know. But this program won't fail you. People will. You know, I remember sitting in meetings and telling people, I don't need for you to come and check up on me, but I need you to at least pass by and see if everything's all right. You know, and maybe two or three people in all the years that I've been here would do that for me. You know, and I know I understand people have lives, but, you know, a little help, you know. And, you know, I have sponsees in my life, you know, that aggravate the shit out of me, you know, but they make you happy. They make you happy. One of them this morning is hiding my cell phone from me, and we get here, and I said, you know, I'm speaking, and I got to go back to the restaurant. Oh, and she had the phone in her pocket, you know. I wanted to murder her, you know. But the wonderful thing about that is, it's, you know, being in recovery, you know, that stuff dissipates instantaneously, and you go back to being your joyful self, you know? And today I enjoy life to the fullest. You know, I go to conventions. I haven't missed the World Convention since I've been here. But I don't know if I'm making Brazil. It's a little too expensive. You know? But, you know, you find things to do. Dancing was like alien to me. I remember going to my first NA dance. You know, and my sponsor's telling me, go ahead, dance. And I said, not me. He said, come on. And he pulled me out to the dance floor and we were dancing, you know. And today, you know, I do service for a component in New York called the Metro Area de Habla Hispana. It's a component that does Spanish meetings, basically, you know, because there's so many Spanish immigrants in New York that don't speak the language. And they're truly dying from this disease, you know. And we do the same thing, but we do it in Spanish, you know. And it's a wonderful thing, you know. It's really, really wonderful, you know, to see that newcomer coming in through that door all destroyed, you know. And then seeing that person change before your very eyes, you know. So total metamorphosis from day one. And you follow them through to that first year, you know, and it's wonderful to see them celebrate that first miracle year. I remember my first miracle year. I had to fly to Puerto Rico to bail my brother from jail. He had got caught transporting drugs. People came in my house, and that was a very valuable lesson, you know, on people, places, and things, because I had started getting, I was already clean, but I was keeping wrong company. They came in my house with guns, tied us up, because the woman had snuck the drugs down into my house and the money while I was sleeping. And they came with masks and everything. And that was like, hey, if you don't die from this, you didn't die from this disease, but you're going to die directly from it because you still haven't cut those ties. And, you know, I knew that I had to stop, you know, people, places, and things. And that was very hard because all I knew was people that used, you know. And, you know, it saddens me to know that I'm not going to be able to grow old and reminisce with any of my friends because they're either dead from the drugs or the virus. You understand? But it gives me a great joy that I can stand here and still give hope to some people. You know, because there's no reason why people should live this way. But unfortunately, it's a reality. You know, and my brother is always sick because of his addiction, you know, and I see myself caretaking, you know, and that doesn't make me happy, you know, and I don't see any joy in that, you know, but that's life on life's terms, you know, and living a joyous free life, you know, is guaranteed to you here if you apply some principles in your life. You know, I think that's all I got. My name is Pedro, and I'm an addict.